Hey folks, in this episode, I get to sit down with my good friend, Mr. Sharky James. We're going to be talking about all things photography, but mainly we're going to be focusing on the impact of artificial intelligence on the photography industry. Hey folks, welcome back to This Week in Photo. I am your host, Frederick Van Johnson. Today, like I said in that intro you just heard, I get to sit down with Sharky James. I'm a big fan of Sharky James. He has a, let's call it, a unique flavor of comedy that he has agreed to lend to the This Week in Photo airwaves. So we're going to have a conversation about a couple of things, but mainly I wanted to pick his brain about AI and the impact on the photography industry. There's a couple of other news stories that popped up that we're going to touch on, but mainly that, like what is happening. Sharky James, welcome back to the show, man. How are you doing?
Thanks, Frederick. I'm happy to be here. You know, I'm a nut job. Thanks for the intro. AI cannot replicate this. I think it's impossible. What would you train it on? You'd have to train it on this nut job, and then it's just going to be a poor representation of the original, right?
All right. You see, you're throwing the gauntlet down. Now someone's going to, okay, I'll take that challenge and replicate Sharky James. Someone's going to make a Sharky GPT, and it's all over, right?
Great. Wonderful. Early retirement.
Yeah. Sharky, for the folks that may not be familiar with you, just to start with a quick, who is Sharky James and why is Sharky James and where is Sharky James?
Let's start with a where. I'm currently in the Kupo Cave, also known as my garage studio, which is always a work in progress. I'm going to unveil it soon. It's really cool. But I live in Boise, Idaho, originally from Chicago like you, right? A couple of Chicago boys here. I was a photojournalist in Arizona for years, and then down in Utah, we moved up here to Boise. And coming up this Christmas of 2024 will be 10 years of my show, which was originally the Lens Shark Photography Podcast. Then 8 months later, Petapixel was like, hey, you know, let's do the, you know, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups thing. You know, your peanut butter is good in my chocolate, your chocolate's good in my peanut butter. Let's put that together. Let's cross the streams, all those metaphors. And so I did that with them for 7+ years, and then decided to switch things up and go back to the Lens Shark Photography Podcast. A couple people out there were probably like, you know, hey, what's going on? Is there, you know, a falling out with them? No, I was just, you know, I want to do my own thing without having to worry about would Petapixel be okay with this or not. And they were starting things up with the podcast and everything, so it just made sense just to change the name. No one cares. It's the same darn show. So that's it in a nutshell. The Lens Shark Photography Podcast. There's two. If you hit any of your podcatchers, wherever you listen to your podcast, you will find two Lens Shark Photography podcasts. You want the one that shows my caricature. The other one is the original, the origin story. If you want to hear how bad this guy was almost 10 years ago, you'd listen to that show and be like, this guy has no future. He will not be around 5 episodes, let alone almost 500 now, 10 years later. It was horrible. I was experimenting. It's basically the same show, but it's experimental. It's worth listening to if you want to embarrass me.
Okay, so before we start this, just one question that's been burning my skull. Where does Sharky, all that come from? What's the origin story of the shark or the Lens Shark?
See, now I could say just go listen to episode one in that horrible original podcast.
Yeah. So when I have you here to tell me, come on.
Back when I was in when I was a younger man in school, a kid, a friend of all things, saw me from the side, and I've got a big nose. I'll take off the glasses here. He saw me from the side.
Oh my god!
Like, he's like, you know what? You look kind of Sharky from the side. He's like, I'm going to call you Sharky. I'm like, oh, that's great.
There you go.
See, I knew better. I didn't complain, because then otherwise that thing will stick. I'm like, that's not going to last very long. So that lasted about 2 weeks, many, many, many years ago, back in the 80s. And then I decided to resurrect it. It was a joke, an ongoing joke with my family over the years because of my, you know, prominent nose and such. And
I thought you had, like, wrestled a shark on a vacation and won. And from that point forward, you were known as Sharky.
That was it. That's a much better story.
Yeah, come on, man.
Yeah, that was great.
Embellish.
So I went with Sharky James, and Len Shark just kind of made sense. And
yeah.
And yeah, so I don't regret it.
You know what? I don't regret. I like it. I feel like your icon and in my context for you is the shark emoji. Just so you know that.
That's great. You don't want to know what yours is for me.
Oh my God! Here we go. Here we go. The poop emoji. Thank you. I love it.
That's racist. Racist.
So you went there. I did not go there.
You are racist.
See, the algorithms are picking up on that. Sharky James, racist.
Sharky. Yeah, exactly. Can't wait. Try that AI show now and see what happens. That thing gets canceled.
You know what? Let's dive in to the first topic, and that's just it's a general topic. You and I have discussed this a little bit, but the idea of it's not even an idea. It is AI or artificial intelligences, or the impact of artificial intelligence on the photography industry. That is a broad topic, obviously, because there's, you know, many genres in the photography world, many different kinds of businesses, et cetera. But from a general standpoint, you know, for the folks that we generally deal with a lot, it's going to be your landscape photographers, your wedding photographers, your portraiture, you know, kind of the meat and potatoes photographers, not the Annie Leibovitzes and all those folks.
Like, yeah, she's not listening.
Oh, yeah, she's not listening.
Hi, Annie. Maybe. How's it going? Call me later, girl.
Can I assist? All right, so let's start it with that. Your thoughts. I am intentionally setting the stage broad. Like, is AI impacting photography? That's the easiest I can make that question, Sharky.
AI is impacting everything, my friend, including photography. And I know it's like when I on my show, I try not to. I don't know. I know you do the same thing with this. It's like, how much AI should I include on the show? Because people are so sick and tired of talking about AI, I feel. But
yeah,
it's something they need to know about, because you can ignore it all you want. It's not going away. And there's a lot of great things about AI that you can make use of. You don't have to just know what's out there. Just know what's out there. That's is what I always say in the beginning of my show. You know, I say, like, you know, making you or helping you to become a more informed photography consumer since 2014. That was the crux of creating the show, was to inform the photography community, let them know what's out there, because it makes you a better photographer. People listen, you know, you can look at the statistics, right? People listen to stories on my show that have nothing to do with anything they're doing. Why? Because it you know, makes you more well-rounded, and you want to know about AI because these things are affecting you whether you like it or not. You may not care about AI, but AI cares about you. You can put anything in there, right? And you know, politics, you might not care about politics, but politics cares about you.
That's right.
And there's aspects of AI that, like I said, you may never deal with, but there's other ones you need to know about. And like, for instance, there's that program Evoto AI, and it's amazing. Like, you know, I shoot portraiture. I'm getting into it more. I've done a lot of sports in the past, but Evoto, literally, you could create all kinds of crazy things. You could make people's whites of their eyes whiter. You could touch up their skin literally with a slider, make them look the best self of them, and then drill that out to hundreds of images and deliver that to your client. That's AI. You couldn't do that before. With Photoshop, you'd have to go through and you'd have to make adjustments to everything. It didn't know what to do to the next image aside from, you know, color changes. But as far as changing, you could change someone's makeup. You could change their eye shadow. You could change their eye color. These are great things to know about. So pick and choose what you want to dive in deeper about AI, because there's a lot out there.
There is a ton out there. And the devil's advocate side of that would be, or response to that would be, yeah, sure, but you can do all that by hand in Photoshop. Why do I need to let some robot do it for me? Part of the joy, Sharky, is learning how to do frequency separations and understanding layers and the Bezier path tool, pin tool, and all the things in order to get to what AI does instantly. Why would I want to use that? Why not become an artisan instead of a technician, I think is the phrase.
This is why. I don't... But anybody who says they enjoy editing images more than like 10 or so is lying to you. It's like when I go shoot some sporting event and I come back with, I don't know, 500-600 images, 1,000 images, whatever, you know, you like to go through and cull the first time around and see what you got. But after a while, it's like, all right, this is getting old. I'm liking all my stuff. I need to step away from this. If AI, and there's AI programs out there that will supposedly pick your best shots, and I don't believe that just yet. I think that's a long way off before it knows what exactly a good shot is. But if you can edit one photo and have it drill it out to everything, why wouldn't you want to spend more time with your family? Why wouldn't you want to spend more time playing with your dog or doing anything but editing images forever? Because that's what it feels like.
Right. Yeah, you want to be doing the things that you enjoy doing. I feel like a lot of the reasons that we learned the tools, and I'm an advocate of knowing the tools, you know, and understanding the fundamentals and then using the new tools to do the stuff, right? But I feel like you should know the fundamentals of photography, composition, lighting, exposure. You should know how to retouch an image. You should know the things that you're automating so that, you know what it's doing and you know how to better control it. But, you know, at the same time, I think about it from the standpoint of, what do you love about photography? Do you love interacting with like, say, your portrait photographer? You love interacting with your subject? Do you love the outdoors when you're doing the shot of the, you know, El Capitan? You just like the whole experience of it and you come away with the photo, which is a memento of that. I think the AI stuff, like any technology, when used properly, because we'll talk about the ill uses of this as well, but when used properly, AI helps you do less of the crap that you don't like doing and do more of the crap you like doing, which is the name of the game, right? So, and through that lens, it's great, because now, oh man, I know I want this shot of this model to look a certain way, so let me Google and watch videos on how to retouch and do all this stuff. Okay, now I got it, and it kind of looks okay. Or, AI, could you make that photo look like it should be on Vogue? Boom, done. You know, I don't know which is the right way. What do you think?
Whatever way makes you happy is the right way, right? Because you know, you're a sample size of one, right? There's another Frederick Van Johnsonism: sample size of one, right?
Yeah, so, I made that up.
Yeah, exactly. Tangentially, and the delta of the all the old school Quip listeners are like, "Hey, Sharky's playing the hits right now."
Yeah. Hey, my favorite podcast. One of my favorite podcasts is Tangentially Speaking. So, just saying.
There you go. But as far as the AI goes, I always advocate for getting it right in camera, you know, and then when it comes, and then learning things. So you don't even have to learn frequency separation anymore, thankfully. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people way overdo it. People do not look like that in person. And I think there's a push to get away from making people look, you know, all plasticky and fake and everything these days. So learn the basics, like you said. Bring that to a program like Evoto AI or all the other programs that are out there that do all the things. And then see what you like, right? Because these programs, like that Evoto program, you have to pay per image that you output, so you buy credits and all that kind of stuff, you know. So, you know, there's cost to these AI things. That's why I said on my most recent episode of my show, the Lens Shark Photography Podcast, plug again, TM. Number five, TM. Right? I don't even know where I was going with that now. What was I talking about?
You're talking about how much you're going to write that check for that you're sending over for the sponsorship. Yeah, thank you.
I didn't even drop my offer codes yet. Come on.
I don't know. Yeah.
Learn all the things. You don't have to. Oh, yeah. Well, paying for stuff. Yeah. I was saying in my most recent episode that Adobe, you know, is always jacking the price up, right? Because they need the money, apparently. And they're going to say, well, you know, AI costs a lot of money. So therefore, now you're paying $60 a month. Now you're paying $100 a month, right? So it's going to keep going higher and higher. And I pay for it because I use a bunch of the stuff. And I like look what they're adding in Premiere Pro. I mean, it's just, that just blows my mind. You're going to be, in the example they showed, there was like this like emergency box on the wall. A guy's like walking through an office building. And then, you know, that's problematic. It's got conduit coming out of it. So you select it and then boom, it's gone every frame. back in the day, you'd have to rotoscope that stuff in After Effects. What's going to happen to After Effects? After Effects might even, I mean, what is it? What's the place for After Effects anymore?
Right.
You can just do this stuff in Premiere Pro. So these things are all kind of melding together, and they're bringing us cool AI. I know people are tired of talking about AI. I'm tired of talking about AI, but guess what? I also love and hate AI.
I wanna address that a little bit, because yeah, I do. I wouldn't say I'm a fanatic. I'm not an AI fanatic, but I am bullish on the technology, and I am not unaware of the dangers of technology or the impact that it's having on several different industries, not just, you know, photography, but copywriting, voiceovers, music, movies, on and on and on, right? It's impacting all over the place, the auto industry, everywhere. So I'm not blind to that, but at the same time, I am optimistic about the other side of that blade, right? Because there's one side that you could look at it from a pessimistic standpoint, like, oh, it's a harbinger of doom. This is our Oppenheimer moment, yada, yada, yada. Or you could look at all the great things that you may be able to do with this technology. I'm using it literally right now. I'm wearing it now.
I'm using it too. I'm not even here. This is my AI avatar.
This is AI Frederick.
He's also crazy.
But I mean, I'm transcribing this interview as we speak using AI, like real time. It's transcribing, and it's going to summarize our conversation into a paragraph with a bunch of bullets about the things that we talked about with timestamps. Right? It's all going to be done as soon as we're done. You know how long it would have taken to do that? It still wouldn't have been that good, right? Just to do it by hand, like that kind of stuff will make my show better and more interesting and easier to access for a lot of people. And I will do it every single time. Whereas doing it by hand or paying someone to do it is not, you know, it's in what's the word? Untenable. It would not be able to do that. So I'm bullish on technology, on the AI technology from a number of standpoints, from the things that we're going to be able to do, the things that are just now revealing themselves, like what Adobe's doing and, you know, OpenAI and Anthropic and all these different companies are just billions of dollars being poured into this space to do all these interesting things. I think the danger, part of the danger is to knee jerk and be a curmudgeon about it, right? Oh, this AI is, you know, and I can understand it. Like folks like, you know, that are, let's say, compositing artists that just look at this stuff that's doing what they aspired to get good enough to do, and they've been trying to get good enough for two decades, right? And now some random person can type in a prompt and get something that looks similar, maybe even better than what they could do with all of their skills. So I get that, but that's a whole different world. But to throw the baby out with the bathwater and say all of AI, I don't care, I'm a purist, it's, you know, whatever bridge you're going to stand on and die on, you know, I think it's futile to do that. I think a more productive way to approach it is, you don't have to use AI if you don't want to use it, maybe. In some ways, you're probably going to have to use it, like spell checkers and all that. It's already there. But, you know, you can take the mindset of being informed about what the possibilities of this stuff is. Like, you don't have to drive an electric car, but it'd be great to understand what the economies around it are, and is it actually helping the environment, or is it hurting because it, you know, upstream was all where all the nonsense happens. So all this stuff, just to be informed about it so that you can make decisions. Otherwise, you are going to get left behind. So if you look at ChatGPT, for example, ChatGPT, which is kind of what everyone was exposed to initially and kind of had their wigs blown back on, was it's less than what? Is it less than a year old? Maybe a year and a half old or something like that?
It's new. Like a year, 5 years. I don't know. It's one of the two.
No, it's years. Under 2 years. It's under 2 years old.
For sure.
And now look at where we are now. I mean, there's a bunch of GPT-like clones out there doing all kinds of different things that we didn't know about. Now we had video, we got stills, we got animation, all kinds of stuff is happening. If you close your eyes and don't pay attention to this stuff, at least when you open your eyes, finally, you're going to be on a different planet completely.
Yeah. Listen, yeah. Don't be Ted Kaczynski in a shack in the woods. You want to be AI curious. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, just like,
that's right.
You don't have to, there's a, listen, you send me these links to these programs and these AI things that are going on, and I'm like, there's something else I got to pay attention to that I didn't know existed, like perplexity.ai. Like, and I downloaded it the other day. That thing's been around for like months now. I'm like, how do we not know this? There is a lot of AI out there, and I think it's overwhelming to people. But just don't let yourself get overwhelmed and get anxiety about stuff. Just, you know, kind of dabble, you know, here and there. Yeah. Check once a week, check something out.
Just check it out.
See what's available in photography and videography, and then just, you know, like I said, be AI curious. See what's out there.
Yeah. Yeah, all that. I think that makes a lot of sense. And I would even push it a little further and say, play around with this stuff. You know, play around with some of them. You don't have to incorporate it into your life or whatever, but at least play a little bit to see what it's doing. So, you know, you're at a cocktail party or something, you could speak about it intelligently. So, yeah. Oh, yeah. Perplexity. Yeah, I've been using that for years. Yeah.
Sign up for Midjourney and do what I did. Just make a bunch of stormtroopers riding, like, you know, motorcycles through the city and then surfing at night. Like, you know, stormtroopers on a date, like all the stupid things. Just do that. It's fun.
Our mutual friend Troy Miller got in there and made a bunch of murderous clowns.
Okay. That explains a lot about Troy. It totally does. He won't. It's okay. He's not listening to this.
Yeah. Troy did that. Who else was doing that? Tim Engel up in Sacramento. He's a photographer Sacramento. He was doing the same thing, making all these crazy like shots. I don't know if you can still do that because they've kind of, you know, made the content guidelines a little stricter. Because they were doing like a clown in an insane asylum with blood on the walls and all the things, right?
Like, none of this existed. You probably forgot this, but I've been on TWIP like, I don't know, 8 or 9 times now. I was on with Tim Engel back in the day, 6 or 7 years ago. Right. AI didn't exist then.
No.
We're not talking about AI back then.
So we've been talking about AI downstream, like how it's affecting photographers in the industry. What about upstream, right? I mean, you know, we've got companies that do photo sharing. We've got companies that make the tools. SmugMug, right? The company that owns TWIP. They're a photo sharing company. Flickr is a photo sharing company. There's a ton of different organizations and industries that are upstream from just the photographer pushing the button. Do you think they care? Like, I have no inside information on what SmugMug cares about or doesn't care about, but like those companies that are up there that are upstream from the photographer, do you think are they paying attention? Are they watching? Are they making business plans for 25 that have AI in there?
You may not have insight into this, but you know the answer. Of course they are. If you're not, you're screwed.
Yeah. Like, really, that's right.
Even your average, I would dare say your average photographer. Remember that horrible term 10, 15 years ago, momtographer? Wasn't that horrible?
Yeah. Was that around the TOG era? Everybody was a TOG.
I hate that. I was on Matt Granger's show, TOG Life, 6 or 7 years ago. Matt. I was like, TOG. Yeah, it was horrible. But no, Matt's great. The show was great.
Yeah. You got to get him back on.
You know, we're old enough, we're in our 50s, we're old enough to remember a time, just look at how much photography has changed, where your average photographer, like 90-something percent of them were men. If you were shooting weddings, you were probably a guy. Now, I think mostly women are shooting weddings. It's probably more than 50%, right?
Correct.
Things are changing. AI is part of that, all the way down to somebody who's part-time, doing it for extra money on the side, needs to know AI. And I would dare say that those people who make use of AI will get things done better, faster, cheaper, etc., and may go full time and really show people how it's done. You have to see what's out there.
Yeah, Yep, I agree 100%. So you brought up Adobe earlier. I want to segue into another one of our stories, which happens to be about Adobe and Firefly, more AI, right? So Adobe Firefly, which is, for those that don't know, check it out at things. You can get it at firefly.adobe.com or just go to adobe.com. I'm sure there's Firefly links all over the place. But it's a generative AI app, much like Midjourney or Leonardo.ai, any of those that make images from text prompts. So when Adobe launched it, one of the things that was in the news about these generative AI apps was, where do they get their training data? Like, lawsuits have been filed, and where does this training data come from that is feeding these images? And of course, some of the scuttlebutt was in some of the Midjourney images that showed up. They had Getty Images watermarks in there already, because so clearly they had ingested a bunch of Getty stuff. So one of the positives about Adobe Firefly that they mentioned at the time was Adobe Firefly was trained only on Adobe stock and other images that were legal to be ingested into the system. They're like, no illegal images inside the system. Well, a couple days ago, we found out that Adobe had used some of Midjourney's output as their input. So AI-generated images being fed back into an AI to train it. And so on the one hand, there is no law yet that copyrights AI generated images. So they were, I'm no lawyer, but I feel like they were fully within their rights to do that, because the image, once you generate an image with Midjourney, it's fair game. Anybody can use it for anything currently, and Adobe did. But do you really want to feed your dog ground up dog? I mean,
When we were talking earlier, you were saying this is like AI incest. And I was like, and this is like AI incest meets Inception. It's like Inception, right? It's something weird like that. I don't know. It's just bizarre. But that's funny. It's like, thank you, Midjourney and everyone else, for creating these images that are not copyrightable yet and probably won't be, because they have to. The U.S. Copyright Office said this past year, I don't know, it was like 10 years ago or a month ago again, right? With everything. Who knows? We're old. Our memories are faulty anyhow. So they said, unless a human hand actually created it, it's not copyrightable. Hmm. And what I've been saying on my show for a long time now is, you know, people get all worked up about this stuff's being trained on our images, etc. Well, that's how you would do it. That's the only way you can do it, right? And if you don't do it, other countries are going to do, you know, Russia, China, these other companies. Wouldn't you rather have an American company do it, right? Mm-hmm. An American company steal from you? But that's the only way that you're going to be able to do these things. So, you know, people, go ahead, train your AI on my images if you want, because I think it's worth it. I've also said in my show, this is like being a photographer and being inspired by the work of Frederick Van Johnson or Annie Leibovitz or whoever, right? And then trying to create something in that style and as you figure out your style. So that's all really AI is doing. And I know a lot of people are going to disagree with that, and they're going to want their money. And also, how would you even collect that? You know, like when there's a settlement, you know, there's a class action lawsuit and you get a check for like 18 cents. Well, yes, you're going to get less than that. So like, it's stupid. It's an impossibility. How are you going to hunt down everyone who created images ever on the internet that was trained on and get them checks? It's an impossibility. It's just, you can't, there's no system to make that happen. So
then what's the end game though? I mean, like fast forward to 20, I don't know, whatever, you know, a few years down the line, how is this stuff going to play out? Are they just going to say, okay, all right, we get it, but we're just going to reset from right now. Everything that happened before this date, it's fine. Now, you know, if you want to ingest someone's images, you need to do A, B, and C and pay them and contract and all this stuff. But anything that happened before, you know, April 1st, whatever year, is fair game. Or do they attempt to shut down the AI, generative AI apps and, you know, just say that it's illegal because it doesn't work right. I don't know if there is a solution. I don't think there is a solution. Personally, I think I agree with you 100%, Sharky. I think, yeah, you could litigate and come to some kind of class action resolution that everybody that fills out these 30 forms and attaches raw files that you shot and they somehow makes it through the system, then you get 18 cents at the end of the day, right? Or is it bigger than that? You know, if you're lucky. Yeah, what happens if Annie Leibovitz, we keep bringing her up, if Annie Leibovitz puts in, okay, make a shot of the Beatles in the style of Annie Leibovitz, and it creates the image, and it is clearly based on one of her images, irrefutably. Like, does she have a legal recourse, or is it just, well, that pixel's different, so it's not yours, Amy?
Well, you could technically sue these companies, and I believe people had, to get access to their data to find out what was ingested into their AI, you know, learning models and stuff. And I don't know what's come of that so far. I'm assuming it's still being litigated. Otherwise, we'd hear about somebody winning the lottery with it, right? And right. How many people are going to be able to do that? It's just stupid. And the whole thing is just one of these things where, as creatives, we just need to take one for the team. I hate to use the term for the greater good, but this is technology that we're going to be able to make use of. And sure, Midjourney and, you know, OpenAI and Adobe and everybody are going to make a ton of money about it or over it. And AI, I think, Adobe has obviously gone to the point now where they are training their stuff on stuff that other people have created that is not able to be copyrighted. They have set a precedent on that. I don't remember anyone else doing that up until now. And maybe, like you were just saying, maybe that's the way to go. Maybe from now on, they will only train it on the AI-generated images that have already happened because that's good enough. Or maybe not. Maybe there's going to be things that are going to come out where it's like, well, we're going to have to – we don't know what this ugly pickup truck from this company looks like. So let's – oh, yeah, the Cybertruck. Let's train it on that weird-looking thing. I had to throw some shade. On that accelerator pedal disaster waiting to happen. That thing's ugly. Come on. Wrapped, it's okay. But, you know, if some new things happen and you type in into your, you know, text prompt, what XYZ, whatever, and it doesn't know what it looks like, So you're going to have to keep training it on new things, right? So maybe they're going to have to scrape the web constantly and also train it on Midjourney. Why did they train it on Midjourney? That's the question. Why? Why train it on AI imagery that already exists when you can train it on the real deal and not see images of people with 17 fingers? Well, yeah. Why do you think they did that, Frederick?
Because it was easy. I mean, I could see creating an app that just, you know, you feed it a database of words and phrases and you just say, okay, just keep generating images. And this AI over here, you keep ingesting images and then we'll let you know when we're done training, right? So just an infinite supply of images. But like you said, you're going to get corrupt images in there. Like it's going to learn that six fingers is correct, or it's going to learn that, you know, whatever biases that pop out of the original engine are going to show up in the new one, right? So how do you control for all that? I don't think there's a good answer. I'd love you, listener. Wait, hold on. You, listener, I would love your thoughts on this topic. So sound off and let us know. So, I don't know, man. So, yeah, I think I don't want to say it's unsolvable, but it sure does feel unsolvable, especially when government, the U.S. government, is involved, right? And they're trying to figure their own crap out, right? Let alone, let's sort out artificial intelligence, you know? They can't even agree on border control or stuff like that.
So. They don't understand it. It's like that one senator who, you know, thought that Instagram had a product called Finsta, when Finsta was just a fake Insta account that teens apparently create for their junk spam crap, you know. It's just like, yeah, you know, they don't understand. So
yeah. Well, hey, we'll see what we see. So companies, we'll wrap this segment up with, you know, companies that are upstream pay attention. People that are downstream, pay attention, because this stuff is changing so rapidly. I mean, there's a new tool every day. I'm subscribed to a couple of YouTube channels that are dedicated to just keeping up with AI and telling you what happened and what new features showed up in this new thing and what you can do now. And every day they're full. I mean, every day there's new things and it's like rapidly evolving organisms that are just, you know, dividing cells as you look at them, you know.
I don't do that because you do that. And I know you're going to text me with, "Hey Shark, you check this out." That's us. So I count on you to let me know what I need to pay attention to.
Hey, I'm happy to, because I'm in it. I think this stuff is crazy. Like one of the things that I hope shows, one of the ways that I hope AI manifests is in cars. Like I want cars to have personalities, and I want to be able to have a regular conversation with my car. Like, I don't want to get in there and like, "Oh, okay, I want to go here." I want to sit in there and say, "All right, we want to go to dinner someplace downtown. What do you suggest?" And I want it to respond to me in natural language, say, "Hey, you should try out this new Brazilian steakhouse over here. It just started, it has 5 stars, and they have some tables open. Would you like me to make a reservation?" "Sure, car." "And then navigate there for us, if you would." "Okay, we're on our way." Boom. You know? That kind of stuff. Or just being able to talk to everything naturally. I was thinking about this the other day. What does that world look like? So I was rewinding back in my brain and I was thinking, my big brother is an engineer and a coder. And I remember back when I was growing up, he used to write code in machine language. Right, which was just matrix level stuff for me. I'm like, how do you even know why is that zero there? Like, you know, had no idea. And I remember thinking back then and now that language was a buffer between us and the machine, so that we could have a conversation with the machine and tell the machine what we wanted it to do. That's all the language was for. You fast forward to 2024 or whenever you're listening to this, and that's still there, but everything's so fast now, we don't need, in a lot of cases, that layer of abstraction between us and the machine. We can just talk to it, natural language, and have it do the thing that we wanted to do. And that's the bit that's exciting to me, especially from a photographer standpoint, to be able to sit back, and maybe Adobe will do this with Photoshop or Firefly or something in the future, but to be able to sit back and say, you know, you have your image, like Sharky, you do a lot of sports stuff, or you're doing portraiture now as well. So you have a portrait sitting up on your screen, and you sit back with your glass of wine or whatever, and you're just like, "All right, skin tone's a little dark." Yeah, you're...
My Costco water.
Yeah, it's vodka, ladies and gentlemen. Don't let him fool you. But just to have a conversation with the photo, right? Just to say, "Okay, make the sky a little darker. Okay, remove the power lines. Okay, do this, right?" And have it just happen instantly, Minority Report style. I think we're close to being there. I don't know.
I think the cool part is when you don't have to think about the technology and what's under the hood and all the underlying stuff that makes it work, and you can just tell it to do stuff. Like, you know, perplexity.ai, the app.
Yeah.
Just ask it something and it does things for you, because people have enough to think about it as it is. I think this is why AI stresses people out, because it seems like it's changing. Not seems like, it is. So if you're anxious about it because things are changing fast, you are not crazy. You are correct. It is actually demonstrably changing quickly. And don't be freaked out about that. Just enjoy the benefits of the technology.
Yeah. Well, we've mentioned Perplexity a couple times, so let me just give folks I know people are in their cars like, "What the hell is Perplexity?" So Perplexity AI is kind of a ChatGPT. It's not ChatGPT, but it's one of those prompt, put in a prompt and things happen. But text, right? It's not a generative image building application. What it does is you could give it a phrase or a question, and it will research it using a number of places on the web, like YouTube or X or, you know, websites and Google, etc. It'll do all that instantly. And then it'll give you a summary of everything it found, along with bullets and follow-up questions and links to the video with thumbnails of the videos that it read through to get the answer to your question. And then it puts it all on a nicely formatted page for you. It's almost like a research assistant that you said, you know what? I'm interested. I feel like I want to go climb Mount Everest one day. If I wanted to do that, how would I get started? Boom. It gives you instructions on how to do it. That is crazy.
It's like everything that Google Assistant hoped to be.
Yeah.
You can go ahead and just delete that app off your phone. Exactly. Perplexity is what you want. Google Assistant is useless.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're funded as well. They're not just some kid in the basement on his MacBook. They've got significant funding, so they're the real deal and they're moving forward. Hey, before we wrap this up, the last thing I wanted to talk about, Sharky, was I mentioned before that I was using AI on this interview. What I'm using is this service/tool called Limitless, and it is a pendant, an AI pendant. Not like the Humane pendant that got such bad press from MKBHD and everybody else, but it is a pendant that you clap onto your shirt or your jacket or whatever, and it will record when you tell it to. It will record the conversations that you're having, both sides of the conversation. It's like, say you and I met in a coffee shop and we're just chatting about stuff and we get on this tangent that sounds interesting. I'm like, hey, Sarge, you mind if I record this? So I tap the pendant, start recording the conversation. I would have to tell you to say a certain phrase to allow it to record your side of the conversation. So you get permission. Then it records both sides of the conversation. When you're done in the app on your phone or on your desktop, it will have summarized the conversation, pulled out all the key points, and given you all the call to actions or whatever in a nice, neat way. So you don't have to remember anything. And part of their claim to fame, I mean, you have to remember stuff, but part of their claim to fame is to supplement the inadequacies of being human, i.e. memory, right? We can't remember everything like computers can. With this thing, you can. So you have a conversation with somebody during the day or at some trade show or whatever. As soon as you leave that person, that's out of your brain, especially if you didn't take any notes or anything. With this, you have the whole conversation and you can go back and say, oh yeah, I said I was gonna call them. Let me call them back, or boom, 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 boom. So I'm using it. There's a desktop application that I'm using right now and it will record both sides of the conversation and it is real time showing me a transcript of our conversation. And when we're done, it will summarize it and give me all the bullets and everything that I'm gonna send to you, you know? So, which means show notes suddenly get easier maybe, I don't know. So. Yeah, so that's, and if it works as advertised, I've already purchased it, the Limitless pin. You have to pre-order it. I think it's going to ship in a month or so. But, it's one of those implementations of technology that I feel like is not technology for technology's sake, right? It is technology that is helping and solving an issue that wasn't so much a problem, but it was an inconvenience. And now it's making it much easier, which means, interviews will get better, the notes will get better, people will have easier ways to find different things that we've talked about in our interview, etc. So yeah, it's exciting. And one of the reasons why I'm bullish on all this stuff, I think, had I not been bullish, I never would have tried it. And I never would have seen how amazing that it is to have that capability in my quiver. And now I have it because I just tried it out randomly one day. So and now I've infected you.
What's going to be more useful, that or those darn Vision Pro goggles?
Oh, I would say Limitless. I would say the Limitless is more. The Vision Pro goggles, which I have, we'll have to do a conversation about those. The Vision Pro goggles to me feel very much like a preview. Let's say that. They feel like a preview of what could be, not what will be, of what could be. Because who knows if Apple will continue it? There's a long line of failed Apple products, that they've experimented with. Yeah, I mean, you could go on and on and on. So they're amazing. The screens in there are ridiculous. There's a lot of capability in there. What's missing is you know, the software or the operating system, Vision OS, needs a lot of refinement. There are a lot of missing pieces in there, which obviously will come. They're at version one, right? So when they get up there a little bit, I think it'll become more and more useful. But I passed the 2 week point a day and a half ago, which was my opportunity to return it, and I did not. So I was, wow. You know, I was thinking about it, right? So I was on the fence, like, do I really need this? That's a lot of money. But I decided, you know, considering who I am and how nerdy I am about this stuff, I would feel bad watching news articles about, hey, Vision OS 2 just released, and now it does all this amazing stuff. And, you know, and I've given mine back. Not to say I couldn't go buy another one, but, you know.
I told you you were going to get it. I mean, if anyone's going to get it, it's you. I mean, you've worked at these companies before. You talk about tech. It just makes sense that you would own it. Me, not so much.
Yeah.
I don't think I would use it that much. I don't watch TV. I don't watch movies.
It's a solitary device, Sharky. It's very solitary. You put it on, and yeah, you can see people, obviously, through the pass-through and everything, but there's something between you and everybody else, right? So it's even if they have one and you're in a room together, it's not, you know, you're disconnected, which for, I think one of the things they don't talk about a lot is for people with larger families that do a lot of social interacting with their family, you'd have to wait till midnight when everybody's in the bed, put it on, right? Because you just can't. If you're single, I've seen videos with single people like, this is the best thing ever. I will never not have a Vision Pro. And they live alone with their cat, right? Which is fine.
Yeah, we'll be single forever.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. What do they call them? The incels? Yes.
Incels, yeah.
Yeah. The perfect audience for the Vision Pro. But I think ultimately there'll be many more of them. I don't think it'll ever be, you know, the what was the hyperbolic statement Tim Cook made, or Tim Apple? He made this whole statement. he made the statement that the Vision Pro was gonna be bigger than the iPhone. It's bigger physically, but it's not. I don't see it replacing a smartphone ever.
No.
You know? No. Yeah. And I don't want the smartphone replaced. Why is everybody trying to replace the smartphone? Even like the Humane with their pen, like, this is the iPhone killer. But what? Like, why does something have to die in order for you to live? Can't you work together? Like, can it, you know, supplement maybe?
Well, it's just like, you know, having the implant in your ear or your ear and your eye someday or whatever, so you can see all this. I don't want that. I don't want to go through surgery to, you know, become part something else. That's stupid.
No.
I can just use my phone.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you can keep making the phone better, make the phone lighter, make it slimmer, and give me little devices that I can use, you know, situationally for my life that make sense, that work with the phone. But the phone is a great form factor. It's fine. You know, just keep refining it, making it better. Don't try to get rid of it. So check that out. Limitless.ai. We talked about that. Perplexity is another AI we talked about. What else did we talk about? Oh, Firefly. So check out Adobe's Firefly generative AI project and our product. And keep tabs on them. See what their response is going to be to the, I think they responded already to the whole idea of them using AI generated images, and their response was they only use 5%, around 5% of the images used to train Firefly were AI generated. Mm. So is that good or bad? I don't know.
Yes, who knows? For the audience, you know, that's listening and everything, where should they go to maybe like learn about these things that's going to be kind of low impact? Like, is there like a website they can go to? You mentioned podcasts that they can listen to so people can be up on that. Where
I will thank you for asking that. I'll put a list of resources in the show notes for this episode so folks can, you know, just go directly to a lot of the stuff that we're talking about. But if you want to know how I find this stuff, you know, and kind of keep up on it, I use an application called Feedly, Feedly. It's an basically a super powered RSS reader with AI built into it.
For years.
Yeah, they updated it now so that you can, instead of just looking at the RSS feed you feed it, you can tell it to, I'm only interested, or build me an AI feed that looks for keywords. Like, I'm only interested in generative AI, and it'll just go out and get you all the stories about generative AI, and you can put them in a folder. Then you create another one that says, I want all the stories about, you know, text-based LLMs, large language models, boom, boom. So you keep doing that, put them all in an AI folder so you can go into each one and look at what's happening in that space, or just look at the folder and it'll rank them by popularity or release date, depending on what you ask for, all of them. So all of the AI stories are right here. In mine, I have AI, I'm covering AI, I'm covering obviously photography, podcasting, marketing, etc. So it's almost like a glorified Google Alerts. You know, you can set up a Google alert, it'll just keep scouring the web looking for things that match your keywords. Think of that, but times 50 and controllable. So
it's a curation tool that's basically, it's like, you know, like checking out hashtags for you, basically. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Really, yeah, it's really good. Yeah, and it's on the web, it's on the, you know, like you said, it's been around for a while, so it's everywhere, right? So it's on all platforms, on web, on iOS, Android, Windows, Apple, et cetera, so it's all over the place. Indispensable. And it keeps me plugged in to what's going on, because then I can just look at one page and see everything that's going on. Also, Perplexity, we talked about, has a Discover tab in there. If you click on that, it's doing much of the same things and just bringing you all the information. I think its algorithm is tailoring its results based on what you've asked it before, though. So yeah, it's not, you know?
That makes sense,
So, very
cool. That's how you
good
do
stuff.
It.
All right, man, let's wrap this one up. Thank you for doing this. And this is, how you like this format? This is kind of a back to a conversational, not an interview, Barbara Walters style. You like this better?
I tell you, I'm an old school Twipper.
Yeah.
So when you first started having me on, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 years ago, whatever, this was the format basically. But I go back even further listening to you and Steve Simon and Aaron Naylor. And Nicole's on there. It's like, I tell you, I want to see those people on again every once in a while. It'll be fun.
They're coming back. I'm going to get them all. I want them all back on.
It'd be great. Just kind of, you know, nostalgic for those of us who are, you know, every once in a while a listener gets on the show. This guy.
Lucky you. No, hey, yeah, at some point the listener became an OG, so.
How did that happen? 10 years this Christmas. It's unbelievable. I just.
Yeah. Now you're an expert. You're an expert.
Listen, well, Sharky, give us the old feed, you know, and you'll be
roll your credits for us, Sharky. Like, where can people find you? Give us a coupon code or two. I know you got a couple of those. You got a whole coupon code tree in the backyard. I know. So yeah, just
hey, those are the people that pay the bills before AI comes for my job, right?
Exactly, or their companies.
Yeah, well, it's true. Yeah. So, you know, you can always just go to lensshark.com. I'm also lensshark on all the socials, not Len Shark. Don't forget the two S's in the middle there, because I'm not responsible for what that Len Shark guy says. So go to lensshark.com/deals, or you can find the link there. And, you know, a lot of people are buying tripods, right? They're buying a Benro tripod from Amazon. They're paying full price. Use the code Sharky20 at BenroUSA.com. You're going to save yourself 20%. Same with Shimoda, Kupo, Fotix, Tenba bags, right?
Send me all of those so I can put them in the show notes.
I will send you all those. Hey, perplexity.ai, send Frederick all thing at lensshark.com/deals. Pretty soon.
Exactly.
So you know, like, if you, you know, go to your favorite podcatcher, type in Lens Shark, you're gonna see two things there. Again, the one that has the, you know, caricature of me is the most recent one. Otherwise, you're listening to stuff from almost 10 years ago now, and you'll be like, this guy, I can't listen to this guy. Which I'm not everyone's cup of tea anyhow. Read the reviews. Everyone's like, ah, this guy makes me nervous. He talks so fast. He's crazy. And everyone's like, this is the greatest thing ever. I love this guy. Yeah. So you know how it is.
Welcome to the world.
Yes. Exactly.
Everyone has an opinion. It's okay.
That's why my mom used to say, that's why there's chocolate and vanilla. You're chocolate on vanilla.
Oh, why do I gotta be? Racial, why do I gotta be chocolate, racial. Sharky? Why do I gotta be chocolate?
I don't know. I well,
Look at it. Yeah, stew on it. Stew on it.
People are so afraid to talk about stuff.
I know. That's the world we live in.
If you're listening to this show right now and you've never seen before, Frederick is black.
I am. Very.
He's black.
Very much. And I'm even wearing black right now.
And I'm a white guy. Isn't that crazy? We're talking and we're not. Everyone's getting along?
He's kind of. I don't know. Yeah. Oh, man. I love it, man. I love talking to you because Sharky, you are like the perfect blend of relatable. I don't want to say comic relief because that makes it sound like over the top, but you're relatable and you deliver the information that you're talking about. Clearly, you know what you're talking about, but you deliver the information in like wrapped in bacon, right? It's easier to digest.
That's nice, bacon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Shark Bacon Podcast.
Yeah. You're saying there's a reason why my show has stuck around for almost a decade?
Yes. Yes.
Crazy.
Yeah. I don't know. I have underwear older than a decade, so that doesn't mean they stick around too.
Thanks for putting that thought in my head, Frederick.
I had to do it. Yeah. That's how this show is going to go from now on. Get used to it.
That's nice. Subscribe if you haven't yet. I know, for podcasters, right? I always forget to hit that darn follow button, subscribe, whatever.
I hate that.
I always tell people, just go ahead and subscribe. If you don't like it, you can always unsubscribe. It's like email.
No, you just tell people, if you really don't like this show, hit that thumbs down button twice. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone's like, I see what he did there.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, please do like and subscribe to the podcast. That will help us out a lot. And make sure you check out Sharky's podcast as well and like and subscribe over there and do all the things. And Sharky, I will put all your links, whatever you send me, I'll put them in the show notes for the episode. So
Sean for the man. Sean. Now, Fujifilm has sponsored me for 5 years this month, and we thank them. I don't have any codes for you, but if you're thinking about switching to Fujifilm, you're a smart person. They make great cameras. Everyone makes great cameras. That's what's great about photography. Before we go, this is the best time to get into photography was probably 10 years ago. The next best time now, right? I mean, right, it's now. Like, you have everything available to you that you could possibly want, and you don't have to spend the big bucks to do all the things. You don't have to buy an F1.4 lens. You could shoot it, bring it into Lightroom, and there's that lens blur feature now, which is getting better all the time. That just check out all the things.
Yeah,
they are fun. Yeah. It's a great time to be alive, in my opinion. It's a great time to be a photographer. Think about how lucky we are to be born in the time that we've seen the internet, we've seen AI, we've seen ugly ass trucks from cyber trucks, right? All kinds of.
Now your state's never going to get superchargers. You see that? Just because of you, Sharky, no superchargers for your state.
No supercharges.
All right, my friend. Thank you so much, and I will speak to you probably in a couple days.
Oh, is it time? Is it time, Frederick, to take the lens cap off? Are we doing that now? Is that what happened?
No, I'm not doing that. I'm going to think up a new one, though. Yeah, help me think of maybe we'll do a poll or something.
No, we're doing it. It's time to take the lens cap off.